This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Here's another Saturday Magazine podcast brought to you by Joy sponsor, Virgin Australia. Visit virginaustralia.com.
Welcome to Saturday Magazine. Good morning. I'm Macca. Huge show today. We have Lord Mayor Sally Capp, who's about to celebrate 1 year since being elected. Saturday Magazine starts now.
From Joy 94.9, this is Saturday Magazine.
Good morning again. Saturday Magazine is Joy 94.9's longest running news and current affairs show. It comes to you live right here from Melbourne, the world's most livable city, on the world's best LGBTIQ radio station. You can listen to us online by streaming and of course via podcasts on iTunes and Spotify. We bring you an ever-changing mix of local and national news, current affairs and commentary, all framed within a queer perspective. On behalf of Saturday Magazine, I acknowledge the traditional owners of the land on which we meet and pay my respects to elders past, present and future. I'd also like to pay my respects and honour the elders from our diverse LGBTIQ communities. And in today's show, we'll have a range of guests and we're going to discuss topics, politics of course, which are current and hopefully of interest to you. Now, I'm going to do a little editorial before I introduce Tass and Sally, if I may.
You may.
Thank you.
Good morning to you, Macca.
Good morning. Good morning, Sally.
Are you a notorious homosexual?
I am a notorious homosexual.
We'll call you NH for short.
That's right. That's right. Now, you know, someone asked me yesterday if I had a faith. They said, are you a man of faith? And I said, yes. My faith is in the basic decency of Australians and the democracy that underpins our society. It's not a religious faith, but it is a core belief. And you know what? It's being tested by the horrible, disgusting demonisation and the flat-out lies that are being told to us in this election campaign. All political parties are using envy, jealousy, hate and lies to win votes. And it's corrupted what should be a noble contest of ideas to elect a government that will respect and nourish the diversity of all our communities. My faith in the basic decency of Aussies is strong. I just wish that our political leaders and class would show some nobility and stop and think about the impact of what they're saying and the impact that it has on people. We deserve honesty and integrity and the facts, and we're not getting that. They might win this election, and I refer to all of them, but they run the very real risk of dividing our nation with no regard to the damage they're doing to cohesion and tolerance. It's simple. All they need to do is tell the truth, deal in the facts, stop dog whistling, and stop dividing our nation. That's what I thought about this week. You can call me a dreamer, but wouldn't we all like the return of a noble contest based on fairness and honesty and integrity?
Well, well said, Macca.
So
I almost agree with entirely all of what you've said.
Oh, God, I've got it wrong then. Now, one thing that's important to me in politicians is integrity and authenticity.
Just politicians?
Well, we elect politicians.
I actually expect that of everyone.
Of everyone.
I find it hard to have a relationship with somebody who doesn't demonstrate integrity and respect.
Yeah. And
irrespective of who they are or what they do.
Now, someone's going to get a bit embarrassed in a sec. But there is a politician that I think does have integrity and authenticity and honesty, and that's our Lord Mayor Sally Capp, who joins us this morning for her 13th appearance on Saturday Magazine, as you come up to the 1 year anniversary. So thank you, Sally. Thank you for your work, but thank you for being who you are and not being afraid to be who you are.
What a lovely introduction.
I'll go now.
Macca, thank you. Cass.
Good
lovely
morning.
To be here. And you're making me a little bit emotional, actually, in terms of the time that's passed and the conversations that we've had and the work that we've done and also our aspirations as we keep moving forward. So thank you.
I remember the first time we spoke to you on air.
Oh, do you?
And I said to Tass afterwards, I said, and I can say this now, I said, I'm going to use my City of Melbourne vote. I'm going to vote for Sally. I like her. I said, I like the cut of your jib.
It's a very modern term.
A very modern term.
Even I got to vote at that city election. Because
did you vote
of
for
a
Sally?
Well, it's a confidential. I can't say who I voted for, but of course I did.
Good. There you go.
So I do recall the pre-election interviews that we had. And we'd carved out a set of questions that we equally presented to each of the candidates. And you were the only candidate that came back with questions to us.
Yes.
And you challenged us to actually think about the way in which we can work much more collaboratively with Melbourne City Council. And I found that particularly exciting. And I thought, yeah, this is leadership.
Yeah.
So I want to go back to some of your commentary, Macca, if I may.
Sure.
The thing that's missing for me in this election campaign is, and you are quite right, the contest of ideas isn't that present. But I'm a bit tired of our government behaving like an opposition political party. I'm a bit tired of that. I want to hear our government leaders.
The vision thing.
I want to hear them talk about what they're going to do.
Mm.
What's their vision for the future of our society? What is the vision for our people? And what does it mean for each of us? Not just some of us, but for all of us. That's the bit that's missing for me.
Yeah.
Call me a notorious homosexual. Notorious. I don't mind.
Sal, what do you think?
Well, the principles of what you're saying, I agree with, absolutely. And I feel certainly from the work that the City of Melbourne does around the city, and of course the great thing about local government is we're absolutely at that interface with the citizens. And the feedback that they give us is very much about creating that vision. What are the ideas? How do we deliver them? But one of the themes that really comes through is about together, because we know that for all the really big challenges that we face across our community and economy, at the end of the day, it's rare that one part of society actually causes them, and therefore it's almost impossible for one part of our government or our private sector or our NGOs, it's impossible that one part of that structure could fix them. And that sense of together, of coordination, cooperation, collaboration, I think was the word that you used, Tass, those themes come through very strongly. And there's so much that you learn when you work with other people as well. And then, of course, when you combine expertise and experience, those two E words that come out of my consulting land, when you combine those two things, you end up with a much richer result. So I think that one of the observations as we go into political campaigns is a sense of I'm going to do this, I'm going to do that, I'm going to fix this. I really feel there's an appetite for people to think that we are going to do it, and what is my role in that, and how can I be involved? And yes, we need leadership, but we need everybody to come along with it. And so we get a strong sense of that at the city. So
Sally, I entirely agree with what you're saying, but the thing about leadership and vision is that people actually will find their role and place in that. Mm. If there is no leadership, then we're just scrambling around the edges trying to search for what our role and place is going to be. And that's the bit that's missing for me.
Yeah, but I actually think that we all have a role to play
in
setting people up for leadership in this country. We've become so into cutting people down when they do come out with new ideas. And we really have to change the type of conversation we're having so that we are open to new ideas, we keep our hearts and minds open. And, of course, not all of those ideas are going to work, but if we're fast to fail, as they say, and we move on to another idea, we're going to be much better off. But unfortunately, we've got into this completely combative sort of approach. You picked up this theme of the noble contest of ideas. We don't debate things really properly anymore. It's either right, wrong, black or white. And if we can move into a different paradigm of the discussions we're having, if as citizens we can say to our federal leaders, we want you to have ideas and we accept that some of them will actually be bad or they won't work, but we want you to have ideas, then I think we will encourage those leaders to step into that because they've all got that. But unfortunately at the moment, and we've all got a role to play in that.
So, Sally, in the context of this election campaign, surely the City of Melbourne must be getting ready for what could potentially be a change of government. Tell us about some of the preparations that you're doing. How are you managing those?
Well, you're right, of course, as all organisations will be doing, they will be considering we'll either continue with the current government or there'll be a change in government. And in the lead up to this election, we're really making the most of the opportunity to put the priorities for the City of Melbourne right into the mix in terms of the way in which the major parties are considering their own policies and what they present. We, of course, we want to work constructively with whoever is in power in federal government going forward. And so we definitely keep all of those communication lines open. We engage as often as we can, but we're engaging on the basis of the issues and the priorities, those challenges that are impacting us, where we see the opportunities. And to underpin that, we have pulled together the priorities where the federal government can really make a difference to the City of Melbourne. It's a document called Call to Parties. There are 19 priorities in that document. We've sent it, and they're in the form of questions. We've sent that document, the call to parties, to Labor, Liberal and the Greens, and we ask for them to respond, and then we put those responses completely unedited up onto our website. But we also use that as an indication of, you know, where are the overlaps of areas of interest, where we might need to do a little bit more work, but certainly hope that those federal parties look at what those priorities are and take them into consideration for their thinking.
And do you have any areas of absolute alignment?
Well, one of the areas I was going to say in terms of really pulling out the priorities is, you know, rough sleeping is the number one priority at the City of Melbourne and how we can really tackle it. And what we've done in the lead up to this election is we've joined with the other capital city Lord Mayors to put this firmly on the agenda for all of us. And I think speaking with a united voice is very powerful, but I think it also makes it easier for our federal politicians to identify what the priorities are for us at a city level. And cities are increasingly important from policy down to implementation. Of course, we coordinate very closely with the state government here in Melbourne. That's not always the experience in other capital cities. But we stood together on Thursday. I went up to Sydney and we met as Lord Mayors, and then we stood together and we really called out to both of the major parties and also to the Greens to say, please address this issue. It has not really been in any of the major debates. There hasn't been a lot of discussion about what we're doing. There have been some initiatives announced around housing, but we need an overarching national policy. This is a national issue. And we need a national response. So we're calling for the federal parties to step into this issue with us. So that's an example of some of the activities that we undertake.
What sort of reception did you get to that call for action?
Good question. No one's rung me yet.
Oh, no.
But I'm sure they're working really hard on a response. And look, I don't want to be flippant about it because I really do hope that particularly the leaders of the major parties are considering this as they go forward. At the end of the day, all of these things are about people. All of these policies are about the impacts on people. And sometimes we lose sight of that. And, you know, I know we need things like tax reform and big infrastructure and capital works budgets. And, you know, to some extent, the City of Melbourne has those sorts of policies and priorities as well. But really, it's about how is this going to impact people? And the more that we can bring those messages to our federal politicians who are responsible for those overarching strategies and policies, but if we can just keep reminding them about the impact it's going to have on people, then I think that's a great role that local government can play.
Because all of those issues, whether it be taxes, whether it be infrastructure, whether it be homelessness, you know, they all actually impact people.
Mm.
And the thing that the politicians would be, the federal politicians and the state politicians should really be aware of is that, I don't know about Adelaide and Perth, but the mayors of Brisbane, Sydney and Melbourne are directly elected.
Mm-hmm.
So nothing a politician respects more than someone who's actually been elected, because they know what it's like. So you actually speak with a voice, you know, for the city of Melbourne, or, you know, Clover, the city of Sydney. Mm. Brisbane is...
Very good question. A new Lord Mayor up there, right. Graham Quirk, who's right. been there for 3 decades, has just stepped down.
That's right.
So
that's all right.
Yes.
He hasn't been on the show yet, whoever he is, so we don't need to know. But again, you know, these issues and doing something like this, like, you know, leading this discussion with another level of government up is really important, because it actually communicates to them, well, hang on, you know, we actually are connected. We know what the issues are. We want to talk about these, and they're not the issues that you necessarily talk about in the campaign.
Yeah, and I really hope that they genuinely value that feedback. As I said, cities are playing an increasingly important role in the way our economies run and in the way we build up the success of our communities. And we're seeing this phenomenon right around the world. If you actually took all of the capital cities in Australia, pull them together into one group. Those capital cities represent just over 70% of the entire population of Australia and the GDP, and it can be a very effective way to understand, again, how do policies impact people, how will these things reverberate through our community and economy, and how can we keep improving? So we're back to that theme, though, around collaboration, cooperation, and coordinating our resources, and when we can do that well, I think we'll really see the impacts we're looking for.
What a novel concept.
So
the three C's.
I know.
If you've just tuned in, we are chatting with Melbourne's only Lord Mayor, Sally Capp, and we're having a conversation about essentially the federal election and what it means to the Melbourne City Council. So I want to go back to the homelessness issue. Why aren't people engaging with this issue? I mean, we all see it as being a problem. You can't help but come into this studio on a Saturday morning and walk over people as you are entering the studio. Yeah. It's really tragic.
Yeah.
But why is it that we're not seeing any real action or change? What's your assessment?
Oh, it's such a good question. I'm interested in your feedback. I when I'm speaking to people, I feel sometimes it almost feels it's either too confronting or it seems almost insurmountable. And of course, those are the challenges that are the most worthwhile, and it really will take that coordination of effort across three levels of government to make a difference here. I mean, the federal government, they have Centrelink. That is supposed to be social security, the blanket that supports the most vulnerable in our community. But we really need some urgent review and change there. For example, the proof of identity processes are so difficult for the people who are at their most vulnerable, really have no capacity to be able to fill in all those forms properly.
You actually provided, you know, up at the Salvos at the top of Bourke Street, the City of Melbourne and I think Australia Post and another organisation.
Yes, we did the lockers.
The lockers.
And
so they've actually got a mailing address.
And the mailboxes, yes.
So in terms of an identity or sustaining an identity, actually having an address.
Those things are very helpful.
Which to us, you know, is... you know, really, really important.
Well, we take it for granted.
We take it for granted.
Simple things
like that.
But that's
a basic thing.
So we can do that, but we still need some of these processes to change. But that's a good example of where we can coordinate efforts so that, you know, there's a physical context for people to be able to receive information and be someone because they've got a post office box, which is absolutely brilliant. But we need the federal government to help us.
I want to go back to my question, though, because, I mean, I agree with what you're saying. They are specific measures that we can put in place, and it's you know, everybody has a role in this. It's not just government, it's also services, it's justice agencies, it's police, it's ambulance, it's health services, and so forth. But why is there still a resistance? That's the bit that really, really baffles me.
I
mean, we are talking about someone's mother, someone's father, someone's child.
Yeah.
You know, why is it that we think it's okay to walk past somebody that's homeless, dirty, unfed, undernourished, completely disconnected, probably, you know, delusional? Why is that okay?
And do you know what? It's almost serendipity that it's not us, but it's somebody else in so many circumstances. Reports that have been done by the Council for the Homeless show that Population of people experiencing homelessness, 40% of those people are in those circumstances because they can't afford private accommodation, and there are 80,000 people on the social housing waiting list. So they are forced for financial reasons, and it can happen for all sorts of reasons that you find yourself unable to pay market rent. So that's 40%. The next 30%, the reason they gave for why they're experiencing homelessness was domestic violence. Why don't we want to help these people? I don't get it.
I don't get it
and
either.
And then from there it goes into other issues that we're probably more familiar with, because we make the assumption that it's mental health, it's addiction issues, et cetera. And
why is it that in a society like ours, 1 in 10 children go to school without breakfast? I mean, how can that be that in 2019, in a society as wealthy as ours, 1 in 10 children, that's according to Food Bank Victoria.
I believe you. And that's a great cause to champion. Well done.
Saturday Magazine, Joy 94.9. Macca and Tass, our guest is Lord Mayor Sally Capp. 1 year in, Sally. Convincing win in the election. Coming up to 1 year anniversary. Your 13th visit to Saturday Magazine. You've been to Joy other times as well. But what is the thing that has surprised you the most in a good way about being Lord Mayor first off?
Well, firstly, let me say I absolutely love every minute of the job. I feel so honoured to be the Lord Mayor of Melbourne, and it would be completely my fault if I wasn't making the most of every opportunity and enjoying it, because there's so much to learn, so many things that stimulate you. Of course, there's lots that provoke me as well, but I certainly feel alive every day. Yes, and I think that's a great thing. But it's a magnificent city that is full of people and organisation, mostly everyone trying their best to do something fabulous and valuable for our city, and that is something that energises me every day. So that's one of the things I absolutely love about the role. The connection to community, it really surprised me how much I enjoy that. Of course, not all of the feedback is nice.
Give us their names.
No, too many. But I do take it as feedback. I try not to get too involved in the personal side of some of the feedback I get and really focus on the issue, because if people have felt that passionate to take the time to write or email, then it's definitely something that's really important to them. So I try to stay focused on the issue. So that connection to community has been completely delightful. And we have such a diverse community, and there are surprises every day. So that's something that's fabulous. I think the other thing that's fabulous, and Dylan here is part of our local government sector, and we were talking just before the show, to say that local government really is an amazing level of government. The services that we provide into the community, from lollipop people and maternal health services through to aged care, helping our new migrant communities, helping our most vulnerable rough sleepers, helping people feel that they can fulfil their potential within this city, whether it's small business grants through to community grants. All of those services are often undersung and underappreciated, because we do tend to focus on building big things, and they're exciting too, and very important. The physical environment creates that, you know, that what do you call it? The painting. I'm lost for words now. I'm looking at you and you're not helping me. The man of words.
Oh, dear.
I was trying to do something poetic there. But nonetheless, it's the environment in which we can all be successful, but only if we've actually got those sorts of services there, that people-to-people stuff. And the extent of those has been absolutely brilliant. And you can probably tell I've become a champion for this local government sector and the work that happens. It's definitely
beyond
rates,
variable, roads and
rubbish,
though, isn't it?
Highly variable.
I mean, from council to council. I mean, there's in my sort of, I live in Port Phillip, but I can see neighbouring councils are just not interested in delivering X range of services.
Why don't you run for local council?
No, I don't think that's for me.
He's got a social media pass.
No, it's so not that. It is actually, of all public roles, I think it is the most challenging, to be quite honest, and highly undervalued, and it's very, very busy. I mean, you are constantly at call.
it's unrelenting in that way.
Hmm.
But of course, you know, then you're open to it being hugely rewarding as well. So
sure.
You've got to look for that balance. And we've got a highly talented team as well. I think the City of Melbourne team really are the best of the best. So
that makes it
pretty fantastic.
They actually get stuff done.
Yeah. And you could never doubt, I'd say 99.9% of everybody there has the right intention in terms of creating positive change. And what a fantastic place to work when you've got that sort of ethos and that sort of energy.
And what about the challenges?
Yeah, the challenges.
The challenges. Oh, it's a goodie. Well, the other side of local government is that, you know, that interface with public, there are enormous expectations about what we can deliver, but we don't always have the levers to be able to create the change that we'd like to. And so that challenge really, again, goes back to this common theme today, which is about how we're interacting with other local councils to make things happen, with the state government, and we do work very closely with them, and I've really valued that. We don't always agree, but we have fantastic conversations and again, focused on implementing things, and then as the federal government level. So for us to make things happen at scale and that have that long-term legacy for the citizens of Melbourne, and just remember, we manage for the daily population of Melbourne, so it's not just about the ratepayers. They are very important to us, but there are 940,000 people that come in and out of the city every day. So to
That's
manage
nearly a million
for them,
people.
Yes. And it'll be over a million before you know it. Don't blink. And so we manage for that. So to be able to do that effectively, we definitely don't have all the powers sitting with us. So that's a bit frustrating.
So I've actually just had a message, ironically, well, not ironically, but from my niece, who's listening in, and hi, Poppy. She says, Constellation Project, and this project is about homelessness, but that older women are the biggest growing cohort of homeless.
That's right.
And if you ask people, and they probably wouldn't realise that or know that, people who work in this area realise that. But again, that's another group that's more vulnerable, because usually, yes, they don't have the support now because they don't have the savings, they don't have the connections, they don't understand how the system works, and you know, they're under all sorts of physical and mental threats. You know, as a society.
And Maka, let me give you an example of that. Mm-hmm. I have a bunch of elderly relatives, you know, women who migrated here in the mid-50s, who are now in their 80s and 90s. You know, my Aunt Georgina has never paid a bill in her life, never been to a bank in her life, you know, has contributed, has worked, has done all the daily chores, etc., etc. Husband dies.
Yeah, she's
finds herself completely incapable of connecting with the world without active assistance.
Yeah.
Completely incapable. So I understand what that's about now. I can see it from a lived experience almost,
and
of seeing these relatives. Sally, you look like you're about to burst into tears.
Well, I just recently met this lovely lady, and I mentioned serendipity earlier because she's an economist, she's an academic, and she had been in a relationship, married, and she'd left all of the financial stuff to her partner. And they had a horrible, horrible breakup. And she's found herself destitute.
With nothing.
Yeah.
With nothing.
Wow.
And no options. She's couch surfing, which technically you fall into
she's
the
homeless.
Definition. Exactly. And no options, and just the pressure, the depression, the disappointment, the frustration that she's going through to get herself going again, even within herself, let alone the barriers that we then have within our society. And this isn't a random one-off example, but it just happened. And even asking her what does she need, she almost doesn't know. So it's a whole new journey, and she has to go through that new journey in the worst of circumstances, and it was just a horrible experience. So you took me back there, you know, I hope she's doing okay. We put her in touch with services, and I hope that she's moving through it. But it just happened. You know, you're travelling through life and you think everything is fantastic, and then there's a change,
well,
and all of a sudden you're homeless.
And it's the same as, you know, people that, you know, might have worked for the same employer for decades. And then all of a sudden, they don't have a job.
Mm.
And everything that they know and the industry they work in, perhaps, is no longer relevant.
Mm.
And, you know, so, again, it's about you know, when local government can connect with state and federal government to raise some of these issues that aren't always on their agenda or not as high as they should be. Sure, we want the infrastructure, we want the roads, you know, we want all that.
But so this is where we need the leadership maker. It's about leadership and vision.
It's a noble
and providing a pathway for people
to
see where they're going. So speaking of vision,
I think you should be going for the Port Phillip Council. Keep going.
So speaking of vision, during the week you released the 10-year transport plan.
Yes.
And it's had a fairly interesting reaction.
I think
it's actually really exciting because what I can see is a conversation taking place about what our future city might look like. What have been some of the highs and lows in that debate so far for you?
Well, I guess the lows are that we can see from some of the immediate feedback that, you know, we're going to have a real challenge around changing some mindsets in the city. But this city has changed so much over the last couple of decades, particularly.
Everyone's looking at me.
And we know that we're all experiencing the change. You know, we've got massive population growth. We have a huge capital works investment program, particularly that the state government has underway with the new Melbourne Metro. All of those things are exciting as long as we are managing them. And we are feeling what I call the growing pains here in the city. And two things that really face us as big issues. One is congestion and the other is safety. And those two aspects really impact our livability and productivity as a city. The things that have made us highly regarded around the world as one of the most livable cities, livability, that sense of being able to enjoy the city and have access to lots of fantastic things and opportunity, and then productivity, which is really about the economics. Those two things are at risk by virtue of congestion and safety issues around transport. And we really have to face the fact that the modes of transport within the city have changed dramatically. The way people are moving around the city has changed. And this transport strategy is about saying we need to do things differently. Here are some suggestions. It's being considered by council next Tuesday. If it's approved, it goes out to the public for consultation. So it's a draft strategy that will then take the feedback and our fantastic team will pull it together for a final strategy
to interject because we've had a message from one of your colleagues, actually.
Oh, good.
Councillor Steve Stephanopoulos from Stonington says, "The Lord Mayor is a great visionary leader and an excellent collaborative Melburnian whom I'm very proud and delighted to work with."
He wants to get on the show.
Steve.
I think so.
No, but that's so kind of Steve to say that, and he's going to know, of course, that I'll say same back at him, because it's those sorts of conversations we've been able to start across our municipalities that are really making a difference.
Now, you live in the seat of Kooyong.
I do. Has it taken us right to this point before you start getting really political?
I'm not going to ask you who you're voting for. Unlike Tass.
I've already voted.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Was it a hard decision or did you, you know...
I think it is hard, yeah.
Did you vote the same last time?
I try to be very thoughtful going into elections. I take my right to vote very seriously. And, of course, now that I've gone through an election campaign
yourself,
and
yes.
I understand personally what it's like to be in these positions, it's really added a lot more in terms of the sorts of things I consider before voting.
Well, we fingerprinted the ballots, so when we pull them out at the end, we'll know.
Why are you so fascinated in what individuals
well,
vote?
Well, it actually... People vote for all particular reasons, all for different reasons, and I'm always fascinated how people vote. I respect it's a private vote, and that's. But I'm always interested.
It is about a reflection of your own values,
it is,
though, isn't it?
Yeah,
Maka?
Yeah.
It's how you. That's the bit that interests me more than who you actually vote for.
Yes,
it's really the underlying values. So when I hear you talk about, you know, collaboration and respect and being kind to people, that is more interesting to me and more valuable to me. That shapes the work that you do, the policies and the direction that you're taking the city council, than the opposite. You know what I mean?
But But I think also that when you look at candidates, and certainly when you look at political party platforms, there'll be things that you might resonate with you across all of those platforms. There won't be one where you agree with absolutely everything.
Yeah.
And so the phenomenon that we've had in the neighbourhood I live in is that it was a state-held Liberal seat for decades, and there was change in the last state election, even though the sitting member was such a hard-working
John
and
Pizzuto,
fantastic
yeah.
local member.
Great guy.
And I think that the policies and overarching sort of storytelling of the party may have impacted that local
may
outcome
have.
For him. Okay. Well, you can say that. I think that in this election, it's certainly
that.
True again. It's the verbiage that's happening and the discussions happening at that party level and how it impacts the work of local members. But I really try to stay focused. I guess I try to balance the two things out, but I really respect hard-working local members and people that really champion issues that are important to their locals, because actually that is the system that we set up and took from Westminster all those years ago, is to have people that can go in and champion the issues that are important to their constituents.
Now, if Josh, Oliver or Julian are listening, and you all know who you are, the three main candidates in Kooyong, don't knock on Sally's door. She's made up her mind.
She's already voted.
One of you might have got her vote, but someone else might have.
Sally, we're out of time, but it's been fantastic as always.
Yes.
I've got to let you know, I have written to the New Zealand Prime Minister.
Oh, good. You said that last time.
Yeah, I said that I was going to.
Yes.
And I've invited her to come on the show with yourself and the Minister for Women's Affairs.
Yes.
So let's
see.
You
do follow through. Well done,
well,
you. You said
see.
That last
let's
time.
See.
Let's see.
Fingers crossed.
All right, my fingers and toes are crossed.
She's probably got a wedding to organise now.
Yeah.
Well, wasn't that exciting?
Yes.
Oh, weddings and babies are so good, and she's got one of each
one
on
of
the
each.
Go at the moment. Can I say, after 13 visits, I'm so grateful to you all, because these are the sorts of conversations that are so constructive. They're interesting. I think they really push agendas along, and we don't always get that. So I really appreciate it. And thank you for the delicious vanilla cake with lime, with real bits of lime icing, with my S for Sally and a candle that you presented me this morning. And it was delicious. I've already washed it down.
In the future, I'll probably only be able to bring it in when I have a sign on my vehicle that says food transport.
Oh, here he goes.
This is Macca. I think he's got too much time on his hands at the moment that he's actually considering all of these things. Let's get him busy.
A lot of people would agree with you.
You
think he'd actually get on the bus.
Thank you very much
for
the work
Sally,
that you do.
Pleasure.
I really appreciate it.
Great to have you in the studio again.
Look, Sally, you're one of the best Lord Mayors in Australia.
The best.
Another good one, the Lord Mayor of the Brisbane City Council, Adrian Schrinner.
Adrian.
Thank you for that.
Well
Adrian.
Done, Dylan.
Adrian.
Adrian
and
Schrinner.
I must say,
he's just started. Yeah.
Another thing, I went to Sydney recently.
Yeah.
And I said, Sally Capp needs to come to Sydney because those damn O-bikes are still there.
Yeah.
And every time I went, Sally needs to get onto that.
Yep.
Have an exchange program.
I like the O-bikes.
Well,
let's not go there now.
If you've, you know where there's an O-bike, email us here and we'll give you Tass's address secretly.
No,
and you can
I know where there's one on my street.
And you can put them all in his bloody front yard.
Sally, thanks
a lot.
Thank you.
Saturday Magazine on Joy 94.9, proudly sponsored by Virgin Australia. Visit virginaustralia.com.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast, brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.